I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, as summer temperatures soar, we will talk about the problem of pet overpopulation. We'll talk about what the dangers are and what can be done to meet those dangers. My guests are Katie Trenopol, Deputy Director of Indianapolis Animal Care Services, Jen Hancock, Executive Director of FACE Low Cost Clinic, and Kirsten Van Wood, COO of Indy Humane. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Our Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about pet overpopulation and homeless pets today on No Limits. This is a conversation that touches a lot of people at a deep level. Almost all of us either are pet owners or have had a pet at some point in our lives and feel a special connection. So I suspect there are going to be a fair number of people who want to join the conversation. If you do, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Katie Trenopol. She is Deputy Director of Indianapolis Animal Care Services. Jen Hancock, who is Executive Director of FACE Low Cost Clinic. And Kirsten Van Wood, I'm sorry, I screwed that up. I knew I would do it. I apologize. COO of Indy Humane. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
And I promise by the end of the show, I'll get all of your names right. It's sort of like that first day of class when you're stumbling through everything. So let's talk a little bit about the scope of this problem. You know, just how many pets, animals we have out there that do not have homes and are not in, in comfortable settings and safe and secure settings. I'll start with Katie on that, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts.
So Indianapolis Animal Care Services is the open admission shelter for the city. We take in about 14,000 animals a year. This year we are trending slightly above last year.
So it could be more than 14,000?
Yes, it could. Going back to 2004, we took in approximately 21,000 animals a year. So that number has gone down historically, and we're hoping that this year is just a fluke.
What accounted for the decline?
Mostly spay-neuter efforts, different outreach organizations that we have within the city, lots of people doing good work.
Obviously, Katie and Kirsten, you both are watching this dynamic closely, too. Is it your perception that the problem is better or worse than it has been in years past?
Well, I think that the public is more aware of the problem. Certainly, rescue organizations in the community have more resources to offer pet owners so that they don't have to worry about sheltering their animals. They can make some choices to keep those pets in the home. So we're really happy that education has improved the situation. I think animal control garners much more support than it has in decades past. So we're very excited about that. But the capacity for spay-neuter in the city is really helping prevent those unwanted litters that often end up in baskets and boxes at animal control.
Katie, what are you seeing?
We are seeing a decrease in the number of puppies born at the shelter, definitely from years prior, which is just a reflection of the spay-neuter efforts. We are starting to see more senior animals in the shelter, and I don't know if that's because they stay there longer, because now there's the ability to hold them and give them a chance that they didn't have in years prior.
And Jen, how about you? What are you seeing?
Well, FACE is unique in the fact that we exist to try to keep animals out of area shelters.
Yeah.
You know, the core of our work is spay-neuter. And so the more that we can focus on making sure that spay-neuter is affordable and accessible, we can have an impact on what's happening at animal care services and other shelters throughout the city.
Have you seen an increase in the demand for your services in the past years?
Oh, absolutely. Last year, we did over 10,000 spay neuter surgeries, and this year we're on track to easily meet that mark again this year. And it's not only owned animals, but it's also stray cats and free roaming animals as well.
How many? Do we have any idea how many of the there are? I mean, obviously, we know the numbers of animals that are in the shelters. It's easy to get a count on those, but I'm assuming you don't, you know, you don't have every animal that is homeless or does not have a home in one of the shelters. Do we have any idea how many there might be roaming? Anyone? I know it's awfully hard because they don't speak and they don't fill out census forms and all of that sort of stuff to track it. But do we have some guesstimate, Katie?
Yeah. I don't think we'll ever have a realistic number of how many animals there are, but I can tell you that between our three organizations, we maintain a database of animals that are mainly community cats that are waiting for spay or neuter, and that database is typically between 1,000 and 1,800 animals that need spay neuter that just don't have transport. So that is a gap that we're trying to fill within the community and having internal conversations on how we can get to those cats.
If you are just joining us, we are talking today about homeless pets and pet overpopulation here in Indianapolis. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits, WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named George has done and reach out to us via email, and our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. George writes, I applaud the efforts of IACS and FACE trying to reduce the number of homeless pets in Indy. On the other hand, I question the continued practice of HSI bringing in dogs from other counties as well as other states for adoption when there are so many dogs, cats in our own city needing rescue, adoption, help, etc. Would you please ask Ms. Vantwood how HSI can justify bringing in 60 dogs from El Paso this week when there are 860-plus dogs, cats, in our overcrowded shelter. HSI doesn't begin to pull dogs from our city shelter in the numbers, which could really help make an impact, yet they are bringing these dogs from El Paso to be vetted and eventually adopted to Indy citizens. HSI's efforts in the past haven't indicated they are really trying to stop pet homelessness in our city. I cannot talk today, and that's a real obstacle in radio. Please ask her just how many dogs HSI pulled from IACS in June. I think the number may astound you as well as your listeners, especially when it seems they somehow are managing to take in these 60 dogs from El Paso. So it sounds like, I mean, there's a level of detail here that suggests someone who's observing it fairly closely, the situation.
Sure. So to address part of it, first of all, we didn't take in 60. We took in 35 small breed and medium sized dogs because we had the capacity to do so. We pulled 41 animals from animal control last month, mostly older cats and neonatal kittens who were in need of foster care. So the problem of too many pets in Indianapolis is still something that all three of our organizations are addressing, but I think we're missing a vital piece of information that Katie can address further. But the save rate at animal control is remarkably high. It's over 90%, and that is not due to the efforts of just our facility, but due to the efforts of the community at large. We have a number of dozens of rescue groups, in fact, that are helping animal control get animals out alive. They have a growing number of foster care providers that are helping animals that are in need of more extraordinary care from their facility. And so the problem is not just where animals are coming from. Part of our inspiration for bringing these animals in is that there was great need at another shelter and these animals had no other opportunities. What having a population of small and medium-sized dogs does for our community at large is bring animals into shelters. We can track that activity. When shelters have puppies and small and medium-sized dogs, the flow into shelters is much greater. If we don't have those animals available to the public, their options are to seek those from puppy mills or from backyard breeders, certainly from other breeders. And I think Katie and I would prefer that everybody adopt from any rescue anywhere as opposed to purchasing a dog. And so part of what we're doing is continuing to get the flow of humans into shelters because we're providing animals that they're in need of.
And I'm asking questions more to clarify because that was a detailed.
Sure.
Humane Society of Indianapolis, I'm assuming, is not a freestanding organization. You're part of the much larger Humane Society.
We aren't. We're a private, independent facility.
Okay.
We're funded only by donations. We don't get money from the city. The national organizations don't provide us with funding. We can apply for grants from, HSUS or ASPCA, but we're not provided with regular operating funds from those. And we are a limited admission shelter, which means that we monitor our animal population very closely and pull animals as we have space to properly house them.
Do you have collaborative relationships, though, with other humane societies around the country? Is that how this event occurred?
Yes, we're part of the HSUS Shelter Ally Project. Mm-hmm. And so when there are situations of need, whether that's a hurricane or a wildfire or, in this case, a shelter that was completely overwhelmed and facing mass euthanasia, we're asked to help facilitate transport, not only to our shelter, but many shelters across the country.
And I apologize, Katie, you were cued a couple of questions ago, and I stepped on it with my questions.
Yeah, so we've been receiving a lot of questions as well, and I just want to reiterate that Humane Society of Indianapolis does definitely support the efforts at the city shelter. They have pulled 400 animals from us so far this year and are at the shelter currently pulling animals.
So of these, 14,000 that we're
yes.
looking at, how many of them find homes out of this process generally?
We are at a really exciting time right now where about 90% of the animals are finding homes, whether it be through our rescue partners like Indy Humane or through shelter neuter return efforts with FACE and their community cat program, our adopters, and then also returning the animals to their owners, which has really benefited from groups like Indy Lost Pet Alert.
Jen, what do you think accounts for? Because it sounds like in a relatively short period of time, there's been a significant increase in the demand for the services that your clinic offers and, a decline in the numbers of animals that need shelter. I mean, to go from 21,000 to 14,000, by my math, that suggests that it's a 33% reduction in a relatively short period of time, right? And it sounds like the growth was about the same on your end. That's a cultural shift. What do you think accounted for it?
Well, I think it's making sure that people understand why spay-neuter is so important. You know, Indy is facing a pet overpopulation crisis, as are other communities, such as El Paso. It's beyond our local community, but it's so important that we stay local and we focus on that. And so, generally speaking, the data suggests that people want to do the right thing and understand that their pets need to get fixed and should be fixed. And it's just making sure that the access is there and the affordability is there, because no matter how much money you have in your bank account, I think we all deserve the love and joy that a companion animal brings.
Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to get at is it does seem like the message penetrated here. Most likely it was not responsible pet owners that ever were the problem, but it was other people. So what began to change minds more broadly?
Well, we're really lucky in Indianapolis to have a group of animal welfare organizations that really looked at the data that comes into animal control and has targeted their efforts on the neighborhoods where this problem is most prevalent. So we go into 10 different zip codes around the city and provide these services. As Jen said, accessibility is a big one. Transportation to low-cost spay-neuter is difficult, and affordability is difficult. And so we find at our low-cost spay-neuter clinic that when we can get the message out and let people know that we've got community cat packages and special pricing if you live in these 10 zip codes, it's making a huge difference where the problem is actually generating from.
Katie, I'm going to ask you the same question, just from your perch. What do you think accounted for, this broadening of the understanding of the scope of the problem?
I think we've got a lot of great groups that have always been doing good work, but getting all of the groups together and in the hands of the people that need it. There's never been a doubt that people love their pets. We just have to get them the resources that they need to care for them.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the problems of pet overpopulation and homeless pets. God, I am my tongue-tied today. My guests are Katie Trenopol, Deputy Director of Indianapolis Animal Care Services, Jen Hancock, Executive Director of Face Low-Cost Clinic, and Kirsten Van Wood, COO of Indy Humane. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the problems of presented by pet overpopulation today on No Limits. My guests are Katie Trenopol. She is deputy director of Indianapolis Animal Care Services, Jen Hancock, who is executive director of Face Low-Cost Clinic, and Kirsten Van Wood, COO of Indy Humane. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Catherine has done and send us an email. And our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Catherine writes, "What, if anything, is being done to enact legislation restricting private dog breeding puppy mills? What are the prospects?" This is like a classroom. Everyone's looking at everyone else right now. So who wants first crack at that one? Jen, I guess they've nominated you.
Oh, sure. So we have taken baby steps here in Indiana in terms of making sure that mandatory spay-neuter for rescues and shelter facilities goes into effect in a few years. However, there still needs to be work done in terms of making sure that we tackle that problem. Indianapolis doesn't have any ordinance in place at the time to tackle that, though, you know, I think we all would agree that we should tackle mandatory spay-neuter because there are cities that have been successful with that, making sure that one component to tackling those backyard breeders is recognizing the importance and mandatory nature of spay-neuter.
What, are there changes in law other than the one that Catherine that would help deal with this problem?
Katie? I think we have several ordinances in place, such as your dog can't be running at large, unaltered dogs can't be tethered in the yard unless they're supervised. Several positive steps in that direction, but as Jen said, I think that there's room to do more, and I think that time is coming.
We've gotten a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air. And she said she is part of a breed rescue group and is constantly running into the issue of people on Craigslist and other sites using the language of rescuers to sell the animals. She wants to know how to use advocacy to get people to stop buying from them and preventing the dogs from being dumped at shelters with their puppies if no one buys them. How do you go after these people? Kirsten, I think everyone's looking at you now.
Well, this is a really interesting question because one of the tools that we can use in our pet retention efforts, which keeps pets out of animal shelters, is to encourage owners to seek rehoming opportunities for themselves. Certainly, you would know better who would make a great pet for your animal than a stranger caring for that pet in an animal shelter. The problem is that a lot of well-meaning folks will use Craigslist to try to accomplish that goal, and we have some predatory activity that's been reported, from people taking those pets, flipping them. Those sorts of things make the national news often. So it's a really fine line. We can't really restrict people from using social media. Certainly, it benefits a lot of pet retention initiatives like Indy Lost Pet Alert, where people can post that they're missing a pet. So that's a really difficult component for us to solve given today's social media climate. But it's a really good question that she presents.
Katie, how do the pets that end up in your shelter, how do they arrive there? I mean, where do they come from? What are the sort of persistent trends that lead to having a pet become homeless?
We have 19 animal control officer positions. So we have officers on the street 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They are mainly responding to investigation calls, such as bite complaints or what we call care and treatment, dogs left outside in extreme temperatures, for example. So those officers will pick up animals and bring them to the shelter. The vast majority of our animals are brought in through our intake door, which means that somebody has either found them running and has picked them up so that they don't get hit by a car, brought them to the shelter, or it might be a pet that the family's no longer able to keep. We do have a program now called Indy Cares, which will help in the situation where a pet owner is no longer able to care for their animal. If they're experiencing homelessness or in financial crisis, that program can help them with some temporary solutions to be able to keep the animal in the home.
Probably ought to talk about steps that people can take to make sure that their pets don't become homeless. That, I'm assuming you would suggest that the pet have some sort of identification on it, of the owner and all of that.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone's nodding their head. Sorry, silence does not work that well on the radio. So what are some common sense things that people can do to make sure that their pet, say it slips a leash or manages to bolt out the door when you're paying the pizza guy or something like that. What should you do, Jen?
Well, I think the first number one thing is making sure that your pet is microchipped. But the microchip only works if your contact information is up to date. So if you move or if you change your cell phone number, you have to make sure you update that. It is not a GPS tracker. It is simply a way of making sure that your pet is identified and can be reunited with you. So that's the number one thing that we always say, because we get it. We're human and accidents happen, but making sure that your pet can be reunited is the first step. And I know we've mentioned them before and we'll mention them again, but Indy Lost Pet Alert is a fantastic resource in the community. So that way, if your dog does get out, you can try to be reunited from that standpoint as well.
And how long should you say that one of these incidents happens, the dog bolts or something like that? Or it hasn't happened to us with our dog, fortunately, but I know that there are some neighbors where the dog figured out they had one of the electric fences, that the shock was just temporary, and that it was a pretty smart dog, that if you could stand the shock, there was freedom on the other side. So, how long should you, if a pet is missing, should you go before you go to Indy Lost Pet Alert or start firing off flares in other ways? And what are the best ways to send the signals?
I would say immediately. Our community is so active in terms of reuniting pets with their people. What Indy Lost Pet Alert has done has been phenomenal. And just making sure that you get that posted as soon as possible, contacting your neighbors, contacting area shelters. I mean, the faster that you can work, the faster that people know that your pet is missing.
And to use Indy Lost Pet Alert, you go to?
IndyLostPetAlert.com. And they also have a Facebook page as well. They're fantastic, and it's easy to post and easy to make sure that you can try to find your pet.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the problem of pet overpopulation and what we do now, particularly since having animals running loose when the temperatures are in the high 90s is dangerous for the animal in the extreme. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Olivia has done and reach out to us via Facebook and find us there at nolimits.wfyi. Olivia writes, are there any efforts made for rehoming exotic pets like reptiles. Okay, I think Kirsten's got that one.
We are lucky in the Indianapolis area to have several organizations that will take exotic animals, reptiles, birds, small mammals. Animal Control also accepts all of those animals and works closely with those rescue organizations. The problem is, frankly, that for a lot of people, it's cheaper for them to buy a guinea pig at a pet store than to care for the guinea pig that they already have. And so these exotic rescues get completely overwhelmed with everything from rabbits to, you know, lizards looking for new homes, because those pets are often considered quite disposable. And so it's a really significant problem for the few rescues we have that are specific to exotic animals.
Katie, what pets present the greatest challenge in terms of caring for them and their needs, and you know, rehoming them?
Yeah, we get a variety of animals in. I mean, we've had everything from a camel to your typical cats and dogs.
So
every day is a different challenge, and I wouldn't say that one's necessarily more difficult. What I have noticed over the last 2 years is that the rabbit population has been exploding. We have seen rabbits coming into the shelters as strays, rabbits dumped in large quantities in open fields, and that's not something that I remember us ever dealing with in the past, at least not to this extent.
And are they domesticated? Like, we've got rabbits overrunning our neighborhood right now, which just drives my dog crazy because, you know, he doesn't quite understand why I won't let him go eat. But are these domesticated rabbits, or are they ones that are running wild?
Yes, these are domesticated rabbits. They've clearly been somebody's pet, and for whatever reason, they've chosen to dump them or have not been able to hold on to them anymore.
And I know I'm getting into asking you to speculate to a degree, but why do people do that? I mean, do they think that that somehow it's a rabbit at all? It will automatically just be able to live in the wild by itself after...
I think that must be it, because, again, we don't question that most people love their pets, but I think that they think that they can just put it outside and it's going to interact with all of those wild rabbits and become one of them.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the problems presented by pet overpopulation on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So at this point, we probably ought to talk about really what constitutes responsible pet ownership. You know, when you get your pet, say it is a dog or a cat, or even if it is something more exotic than that, what steps should you take to make sure that that pet will, A, not become homeless, but also will not add to the pet overpopulation problem? I'll start with Kirsten on that one.
I think the first thing is to make sure that you have a veterinary relationship, so that your pet can be properly immunized and cared for if there's a traumatic event or if your pet gets sick. We can't underscore enough the relationship that is necessary to keep your pet healthy. And that, in turn, when people have healthy pets that they're caring for, keeps them out of animal shelters.
Jen.
Absolutely. The first step is making sure that you have that veterinary relationship. Also recognizing the commitment that comes along with pet ownership. It's not just a few years. It's often, you know, 10, 15, and for some lucky cats, 20 years. And recognizing what your life is going to be like down the road. Maybe you're newly married, but are the kids going to be part of the equation, and how that's going to impact your, you know, canine or feline family members as well. And making sure that you obviously have the pet fixed, so that way when accidents do happen and your dog slips out the door or your cat wants to roam because it's not fixed, making sure that spay neuter is always part of it, and making sure you keep on top of that regular annual checkup, making sure you have your vaccinations. And if we can keep pets happy and healthy, ultimately they'll stay with the people who love them, and especially if there's that safety net in terms of affordable care.
Katie.
Absolutely. That relationship with your vet, and it doesn't have to be a full-service vet clinic. We've got a lot of great resources like FACE and like the Animal Welfare Center run by Indy Humane that provide low-cost options. But getting those vaccines, I can't tell you how critical that is and how many cases of parvo we see come in through the shelter that could have been treated with or could have been prevented with just a vaccine.
Probably ought to talk about what that is.
Parvovirus is a horrible virus that we see typically in the spring and summer that affects mostly puppies and young dogs, sometimes senior dogs, but it is very deadly if not treated, very expensive to treat, and very contagious. So in the shelter environment, we're very nervous to have it in the building, but a pet owner can prevent it with a simple vaccine that is, what do you guys charge, $10?
Exactly, yeah, and our full package starts at $32.
Yeah.
And what are the symptoms?
The symptoms usually start with diarrhea and just being lethargic, some vomiting. But the diarrhea does advance to bloody diarrhea. The dog will stop eating or drinking and will eventually die without treatment.
And at what point should you consider having your animal spayed or neutered?
We always recommend fixed by 4, so that means 4 months. But different shelters offer different requirements. See, I think the city shelter, Katie, you do at 2 pounds, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
2 pounds or 4 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And those are safe for both cats and dogs,
yes,
recommendations.
Correct.
And what is the cost for doing that? I'll start
sure.
with a low-cost clinic here.
Wonderful. So for cats, we charge a flat fee of $40. And then for dogs, it starts at $65 and then it goes up based on their weight.
Okay. And if people want to schedule an appointment to do this, presumably if they're listening to this program and they're interested in helping solve this problem, how do they go about doing that?
They can go online to faceanimalclinic.org or they can give us a call at the clinic at 317-638-3223.
And how long is the process normally?
The process, it's a same-day procedure. So you come in, usually between 7 and 8. You'll spend about 90 minutes making sure that your pet is examined and for a pre-surgery examination. And then they'll come back that same day. Cats usually at between 5 and 5:30. Dogs between 5:30 and 6. And then they're given post-operative care and treatment to make sure that their animal is recovering well. And if not, they can come back to us always. And it's a really simple process. Right now, though, because it is summer, wait times are a little bit longer. We still have some availability for July, but we're already booking into August.
And this is the question that that I recall, because when we had our dog fixed, he had to wear the cone for a while. And I've got to say, just absolutely hated it. Just absolutely hated it. How long generally is the recovery process for the animal? How long do you have to keep the animal away from the stitches?
We do try to make sure that they limit activity for a week just to make sure that they're kept inside and monitored, because you're, as a pet owner, the person who's most likely to be able to notice if something is going on. Dogs do have to wear their cone of shame for a few days to make sure that the stitches aren't messed with. But, you know, one thing I love about our surgeons at FACE is that we use a wonderful technology. And for spays, it's a really minimal incision. It's about maybe an inch, if that. And, of course, neutering is really simple and very fast.
Well, I'm not even going to go.
We don't have to.
Kirsten, are there other steps that people should take to be responsible with their pets?
I think another big one is making sure that your pet is identified and that your contact information is updated. That's how the thousands of animals that flow into Indianapolis shelters can be reunited with their owners.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the problems of pet overpopulation, particularly in these really brutal summer months where having pets running free outside is dangerous to them and their health. We want to focus attention on what the problems are and what can be done to solve them. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Katie Trenopol, Deputy Director of Indianapolis Animal Care Services, Jen Hancock, Executive Director of FACE Low Cost Clinic, and Kirsten Van Wood, COO of Indy Humane. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the problems presented by pet overpopulation. My guests are Katie Trenopole, deputy director of Indianapolis Animal Care Services, Jen Hancock, executive director of Face Low Cost Clinic, and Kirsten Van Wood, COO of Indy Humane. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Raphael has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Raphael, you're on the line.
Yes, thank you. I was wondering, if there's such a high interest in getting dogs adopted, why does it cost so much to do so? I mean, for example, on the National Mill Dog Rescue website, it can cost up to almost $300 to adopt a dog. I'm just curious. Thanks.
Okay, well, we'll see if we can get an answer for you. Thanks very much for the call, Raphael.
Thank you.
Thank you. Kirsten?
Yeah, it depends a lot on where you're sourcing your adoption animals from. Certainly, animal control has offered very low and no-cost adoptions throughout the year with the support of some funders. Indy Humane tries to do as much as we can to cover the hard costs of preparing animals. Everybody is tested and dewormed and given preventatives and fixed before they leave and microchipped and those sorts of things. So recouping those hard costs allows us to help even more lives. And then certainly with very small private shelters, most of the time, their rescue efforts have to be funded by their adoption fees. And so those can range if they don't have low-cost options available for prepping those animals for adoption. Certainly, purchasing an animal is much, much more expensive than adoption from animal control or local rescues. So we would encourage people to save some money and adopt.
Katie, how much would it cost to adopt a pet?
For the month of July, all animals at Indianapolis Animal Care Services are free. So you come in, if they're already spayed or neutered, they go home with you the same day. They've already been vaccinated for illnesses such as parvo. They've been heartworm tested or combo tested, which is for FIV and feline leukemia in cats. And they are microchipped, and that microchip is registered to the new owner.
Okay, before we move on from this, since it sounds like there is a sale running on for the next, 29 days or 28 days, 4 weeks, if someone wants to adopt a pet, how do they go about doing that with you?
Well, we need them to get to the shelter as soon as possible because we are extremely full right now. But we do have about 850 animals looking for homes, and they can come down to the shelter at 2600 South Harding Street. We do always recommend that they bring the entire family to make sure that the animal that they're picking out is going to be the right fit for them. We always want the animal to be in a forever home once it leaves our shelter.
Is there a way for people to do some advanced reconnaissance online or anything like that?
Yes, you can visit our website, www.indy.gov/ACS, and view all of our adoptable animals.
Okay. We've also gotten a comment or question from a listener named Andrea via Facebook. And again, if you want to find us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. It says, I've heard of a lot of otherwise responsible dog owners who decide not to spay neuter in case they want to breed or stud their dog one day. Are there any laws or ordinances around this? They aren't interested in becoming licensed breeders. Katie?
As of right now, there are not any laws that regulate breeding. And as far as licensed breeders, that's not really a thing, at least not in Indianapolis. She might be referring to AKC registered breeders or some other national registry like that.
Okay. So I'll ask someone who is not necessarily on a government payroll then to answer that. Should there be laws like that?
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm sorry to dive right in, but absolutely I think that there should be because, you know, there are often health issues that go along with those pets, not to mention humane issues that go along with those types of situations. And we see it so many times. People think, well, I'm going to have my dog spayed after, you know, she's had her first litter or she's gone into heat. And that doesn't prove very helpful for them, because then they often have a litter of puppies that they can't financially afford.
Are there other changes in law, Kirsten, that you would recommend that would encourage responsibility pet ownership?
I think that part of this needs to be just really intense and focused education. I think often our first thought is to mandate behavior, and that doesn't usually result in cultural change. What we need to do is educate people to the benefits of having your pet fixed, like health benefits. You can just about guarantee that your female dog will not develop mammary tumors if you spay her before she's had a heat cycle. There are a number of other health benefits to pets when they're fixed and not used for breeding purposes. So if we can encourage people to learn more about that process, I think that that will serve us better than mandating behavior.
Are there ways we could incentivize the system, you know, by tax credits or something like that, if you can demonstrate that you've spayed or neutered your pet in a responsible time frame? Jen?
You know, we could certainly explore that. I know there are, you know, tax credit benefits for many organizations can apply for that impact humans, but unfortunately we don't have that currently here in Indiana. And, you know, I think all of us would love to see additional incentives, and whether it's funding that helps the individual so that way they get the pet fixed, or whether it actually helps the organizations that are providing those services so that way they can provide even reduced spay-neuter services or even free spay-neuter services. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to the financial resources that we have available.
Katie, how much does it cost to run the shelter to serve those 14,000 plus animals per year?
Our operating budget is $5.4 million for the year, and that includes the building maintenance to have those animal control officers that are out on the street responding to about 29,000 calls for service a year, and then caring for the animals in the shelter.
Okay, so you've got a certain number of fixed costs, but what would you say is the cost every time an animal is brought in to you?
It's roughly $311.
Roughly. Give or take two or three pennies on either side.
It changes every day.
Okay, $311, so it seems like some portion of that could be allocated toward, because it's tax savings, and I'm assuming most of that comes, you know, you're funded through tax dollars. So
correct.
Any of the savings that are achieved are savings that go back to the taxpayers. We've got a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. And says, Indianapolis does have regulations about dogs being brought inside during severe weather. Can the guests mention FIDO, Friends of Indiana Dogs Outdoors? They have people build kennels and help get dogs off chains. Yes,
absolutely. And I want to thank that listener, because FIDO is a fantastic resource here in Indianapolis. You know, I know they're working very closely with Katie and the ACOs at Animal Care Services. They do so much street outreach, because when you talk about changing the culture and being able to meet people where they are, it's literally walking the streets. And I couldn't say enough, but FIDO does that and they're awesome.
Are there other groups like that deserve a shout out?
Yeah.
Katie.
FACE does outreach. Indy Humane and their Animal Welfare Center does outreach. We have officers that are out doing outreach efforts. Indy Lost Pet Alert. There's so many different ones.
And I'd also want to say SOAR as well.
Yes, SOAR, Street Outreach Animal Response. They work specifically with people who own pets, and the people are experiencing homelessness themselves. They have a vet that will go out there and, again, reach people where they are at. And those are people that we can't reach through traditional methods.
So. Kirsten.
Another organization whose impact reaches not only Indianapolis but statewide is Spay Neuter Services of Indiana, who helps subsidize some of the spay and neuter surgeries that our clinic and the FACE clinic perform, not only for private individuals but also for rescues who are taking in homeless pets, and they do fantastic work.
Probably ought to ask, since as I heard one of the you know, the primary reasons that pets become homeless is because of changes in their owner's circumstances. Either they have to move or, you know, in the worst case scenario, they become homeless themselves and literally don't have a home to provide. If you are facing a situation like that where you're going someplace that it's just not practical or maybe even responsible to take the pet with you, what is the best way to try to find a new home for that pet? What is the most responsible way to do that? I'll start with Kirsten on that one.
We encourage people to seek assistance from friends and family because certainly those in your close circle know your pet and will be able to help you decide whether they could be the next home for your pet. So certainly look at your own resources and see whether there are people amongst your circle that could rehome your pet for you.
Katie?
So Indianapolis Animal Care Services recently started a program called Indy Cares, which is funded by our nonprofit foundation, and its mission is solely to help people in those situations. So whether you have a sick dog that you can't afford to treat, or you have an emergency situation where you have to move, maybe you're a victim of domestic violence, we can help you in those situations by either providing temporary housing, providing funding in some cases, or getting you in touch with those resources like SOAR or FIDO that already exist.
Gotten a Facebook comment from a listener named Kay. And again, if you want to join the conversation via Facebook, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Kay writes, just a comment, if you find a stray, most vets and pet stores will check for microchips for free. Are there other such services that pet owners or people who see pets running loose and pick them up should know about, that there are ways to check where they come from? Katie?
I would go back to Indy Lost Pet Alert. In addition to having their website and their Facebook page where you can both post your lost pet or your found pet, they will also have volunteers come scan for microchips in some situations. But most of the time, it's going to be more convenient to go to the nearest vet clinic and get that animal scanned for a microchip or go to one of your shelters.
We're talking about the problems of pet overpopulation on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Di has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Di, you're on the air.
Good program today. It's interesting because I've had this past week possibility of talking with the Humane Society.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, there seems to be a great infestation in our neighborhoods in Indianapolis with raccoons, and I've talked to several people who have had the same problem. And years ago, when we had problems with those types of wild animals, squirrels, raccoons, that kind of thing, we could come to the Humane Society and get cages to kind of trap them. And I guess this is no longer the case. Just wondering when that change took place, where basically the Humane Society is just dealing with pets and that kind of thing.
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Di. Kirsten.
Well, I've been with Indy Humane since 2009, and we have not rented traps for folks to trap wildlife since that time. I don't know that they were doing it much before then. I'm looking at Katie to see if she can recall the last time either organization rented traps.
Right. So Indianapolis Animal Care and Control back in 2004 when I was an officer, even back then we did not loan out traps mm-hmm. for wildlife. We always referred people to wildlife removal services. Most of the time the wildlife was there long before us. And the best way to control them is to control whatever is driving them to the area. So by covering up your trash, making sure that you're preventing ways for them to get into your house and that sort of situation.
If you are dealing with a problem like raccoons or, you know, my particular favorite because it long ago we had a possum that dragged a fresh kill over to where our dryer vented which gave the house just the most pleasing aroma after a couple of days, and we couldn't figure out what the heck it was until I was down loading the dryer and saw these two eyes staring back at me through the window and realized I better go check that out. If there is a problem like that, how should you go about dealing with it, Katie?
Wildlife Removal Services, which are going to be private companies that you can find online. We don't have any one organization that we recommend. There is going to be a cost associated with that. So, again, we would recommend if they're looking for a heat source like a dryer vent, cover that up so that they can't get in. Cover up your trash cans because they're looking for a food source. And that's going to be your best bet.
We've also gotten a tweet from a listener, and again, if you want to join the conversation via Twitter, you can find us at WFYI. This listener writes, great to hear spay and neutering is reducing pet population in Indianapolis thanks to these wonderful organizations. So that's got to feel pretty good to hear, right? That's kind of why you do what you do, right?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. We do our work not only to make sure that we can reduce the number of animals who are needlessly euthanized, but also to make sure that pets are staying with the people who love them.
And, of these, is there still, we've talked about the fact that gains have been made here. What is the greatest area of gain that remains out there? And I hate to ask this question, we've only got about 90 seconds left, but I'll start with Kirsten on that one. If you could each take maybe 30 seconds and come up.
Sure. I think further education and letting the public know about the resources. We have everything from pet food pantries to organizations that will help you get your pet fixed, and we just need to continue the work to get those resources into the hands of the pet owners.
Katie?
I would agree with Kirsten and also say spay-neuter. I mean, it's great we've come so far, but we've still got a long way to go.
Jen?
I'm along the lines of both of them, making sure the education is out there and making sure accessibility is there, and spay-neuter always.
Okay, this will be the last word then. If you are out there and you're an animal lover and you see a pet that you think is a stray, what is the step that you should take if you find a dog running loose in the neighborhood and there's no way to immediately identify where the animal is, but you want to make sure that it is taken care of? What should you do, Katie?
If you can safely handle the animal and take it in to be scanned for a microchip, hopefully that animal is microchipped and the owners have been listening to us. But if not, the city shelter is open every day except for Wednesday and can take that animal in. And luckily we are at a day now where animals don't face euthanasia just because the shelter is full. So we will do our best to find that animal's home or at least a new home.
Well, that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank all three of my guests, Katie Trenopol, Jen Hancock, and Kirsten Van Woot, for a lively conversation about our pets. Also like to thank our listeners for some great questions. Want to invite everyone to come back on Thursday when we're going to talk about the Vietnam War with a husband and wife writing team. I am John Kroll. I wish you all a happy 4th. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.